Blog Talk Radio.
And it's a good story, And today we have a special show. It's on horror writing and things of that nature. And the song, Virginia, V.S. Denier put it on for me for our different songs, but we needed something different today. And, okay, today is December 4th. It's 4 o'clock Eastern, and it's a good story, And we're having a really special show. We have a few people that aren't coming today that were supposed to be on, but they'll be on a later date. And but we do have Elizabeth Black, Trent Zelazny. We have Charles Day and me, Marcia Casper Cook. Okay, right, so whoever I am. Okay, and this is going to be a good show. And we're going to talk about a lot of different things than we usually talk about, but... And I'm going to talk to you just for a second so I don't forget the things about the shows we're having. Okay, yesterday's show, if anybody listened in, I'm sorry, it was canceled. And Virginia, that was Virginia's show. And we do have a show on with Fran Lewis, and it's all about veterans. She's got a really good show, and it's at 4 o'clock Eastern tomorrow. And then Friday, Virginia, myself, and Bethany Cross are on with... I'll tell you who it is. It's V.C. Andrews, and he wrote Flowers in the Attic, and he wrote a lot of different things, and he wrote actually 40-some books. And a thriller, mystery, and it's going to be a great show. And he also wrote Devil's Advocate. And so he will be on with us at noon Central, 1 o'clock Eastern, this Friday. And then we have our usual show for story time on at 9 o'clock Saturday morning, and that's with J.D. Holliday and Chris Connolly, and that should be a really fun show. And then we have just a couple shows more, and then we're all going to be off for the holidays because everybody else is shopping, so I suppose we have to go shopping too. All right, so, and that's the schedule. Okay, so let me bring out, everybody can come out. Elizabeth, we'll have Elizabeth and Trent, and we have... Charles Day, which we've never had on before. So, Charles, hi, who are you?
Yes. All right, how are you?
So, you haven't been on our show, and Christopher Beck was supposed to be on. So, why don't you tell a little bit about yourself so we know who you are and what you do?
Okay, yeah. Christopher had told me about this, so I was excited to come on. Charles Day, I'm an author of young adult novels. I've got a young adult novel out now called Legend of the Pumpkin Thief, and I have a forthcoming trilogy coming out, Kyle McGirt, Destroyer of the Indian Curses. It's a Western horror fantasy going to be published with Bloodbound Books Publishers. So I love young adult fiction and horror and fantasy, so I kind of combined everything in that. And I'm also a publisher. I own Evil Jester Press. Hidden Thoughts
what,
Press.
What's the name of the press? What was the name of the press? What's the name?
Oh, Evil Jester Press.
Oh, okay, Evil Jester. Okay. Do you have a website for that so people can know that?
Yeah, it's a dark fiction horror press. And then Hidden Thoughts Press is nonfiction, which is mental wellness books and inspirational books for people that are recovering from mental illness. And... I just recently started a new division on with comic books and graphic novels through Evil Jester Presents, which is part of Evil Jester Press. So I'm keeping busy, and I work a day job.
Yeah, I think so. Okay. And then we're going to let Trent, how are you? I'm so glad you could come on. Hi. I know about you. You want to say a little bit about you, and then we'll bring Elizabeth, and then we'll just all talk.
Okay. I'm Trent Zelazny.
and hello. And I'm a writer of crime and dark fiction and some horror and a little bit of science fiction. I just had a book come out on Halloween called Too Late to Call Texas, which is
actually that's on my blog. I really love that cover. I love it. I do. It's on the blog. I used that for the first picture of it. I really do. I love it.
Oh, excellent. And it's a thriller, noir, borderline Western novel, which I like. I actually just this month have two short stories out in Evil Jester Digest Volume 2.
Yes.
And it all ties in. And currently working on two new novels, and one of my plays was actually just picked up to be performed in Australia. So
wow, what play is that? That's great.
So that's it for me.
Okay, that's enough. Okay, before I forget, you do plays? I didn't know that. So, I want to have some shows on screenwriting and playwriting, so that I'll just keep that in mind because, I am a screenwriter also, so this is good. All right, I'll remember that now. Because everybody, certainly on this panel, what we'll hear in a minute, because Elizabeth, everybody does a lot of things, which is a really good thing for what we're going to talk about today. Okay, Elizabeth, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm Elizabeth Black, and I write horror, dark fiction, some thrillers, and a lot of erotic romance and erotica. And I write horror with my other pseudonym, E.A. Black. So you can find me either which way online. But I've written for Mirages, Tales from Authors of the Macabre, which is edited by Transalazmi. And I've written for Superfine Stories. And have
Trent, you edited
it? Yes,
he
edited it.
This is like such a roundabout show. Look at this. People might think I might have a normal show. Everything works out.
It's all very incestual.
I didn't know that about you. Look at this. I didn't know that about you. All right, that's good. So I guess everybody here does a lot of everything. This is the one question. I don't always ask questions, but this is something that, I've noticed lately because I myself have done, screenwriting and books and under Marcia Casper Cook, and now I do romance erotic under Madison Montgomery plus just plain romance under Madison Montgomery. But this is the thing. I've been doing this for years along with my screenplays and everything else, and it's like this seems to be a problem. I think some readers are getting scared away of different genres because everybody, if you say horror, you say erotic, you say this, they go like, oh, I don't want to read that. But it's really, that's what we all have to say is the genres that we do. But like everybody on this panel seems to write a lot of different things, which is very hard to qualify, I think, now what anything is. And if you say erotic, then you lose an audience. If you say romance, you gain an audience, and then you might get a few people upset because of the words. But however, most books have them. So what is everybody's opinion on, we'll start with you, Trent. How do you feel about that? Because you're writing different genres. How do you feel about how these are all classified and what is going on in the publishing industry to make people scared of reading some of these books that are really good?
I think people, people love to pigeonhole anybody. I started out way back in the day writing science fiction and found out I just wasn't any good at it. and slowly got more into horror, which then led me into crime, but the other loves are still there, so those still pop up. But my father was a science fiction writer, which has been, a shadow I've lived in ever since I've been a writer, really. And, it's weird because people, a lot of science fiction fans are drawn to my stuff initially, and then they realize, oh, he doesn't really write much science fiction. So I lose an audience, but then, there are some people who found my stuff who didn't even know who my father was, who really like my work.
Right. That's the thing. I mean, you might have started living up to that, but then you have your own thing going on here,
Yeah. And
so they have to they have to probably move on from the old type of thinking that people write in just one genre.
Right. I actually just had lunch right before this with an author named James Reich, and we were talking. He has a book called I, Judas, which is good, and you should pick it up. We were talking about the pigeonholing thing, and if you sort of wanting to branch out and try different genres, different things, we kind of come to the conclusion it was a lot easier to do that, at least earlier on in your career, especially doing it in short stories, rather than trying to write a science fiction novel and then a romance novel and then a horror novel all with the same name.
Right. Yeah, I think you're right.
But short stories, you can spread yourself out more without
as
much
investment. I think that's true, because that's how I started writing the erotic novel. One, I used one of my characters on my screenplays. I started with my first short, sexy lunch story. Then it went into the second one, and now I'm on the third, and I'm probably going to make it into a novella. But I absolutely agree that that's a great way for people who haven't written anything to just start, because it's awfully, you know, it's overwhelming to try to write 200 pages sometimes. So if you try to write although a short story is really hard. I've never really done that till now. I do screenplays and books, but never short. I think you're right about that. It's a great way for people to try different genres, and either sometimes you can make it or you can't, you know.
Yeah, and you're not out the, I mean, I guess you're not out the investment of time so much trying it. You know, I mean, a short story can be hard to write, but it's going to take you less time to write a short story than it is a novella or a novel.
Yes. Elizabeth, what do you think about this now? Because you write in all the genres too?
I write in all the genres as well as writing nonfiction. But as far as fiction goes, I write more short stories than anything else. And, my very first published story was a short story. And it was an erotic story with an erotic version of Cinderella. And I'm just pretty much getting started in horror. I have three stories out and two more coming out. And all of them are short. I'm working on a novel, but like Trent said, short stories don't take as long to write. They're harder to write, but they don't take as long to write. And they're a good way of keeping your name out there in between, you know, long novels, because they can take a couple of years to write. So, I mean, that's one main reason. And then I like to experiment. I find a call that interests me. And I like to stretch myself a bit and try writing in a style that I haven't tried before. And, I get rejected like everybody else, but it's the exercise of the writing that I enjoy so much. And I do that with both my erotic fiction and with the horror and dark fiction. And in the erotic horror fiction, some of that, too.
Yeah, well, I think, having not done a short story, but tried, because I do feel that, I've never been in the erotic romance market, but now that I've done this, I kind of look at it where, I see that people say it's erotic, but I also know that when you're writing just a mainstream romance novel, you have sex. It's just some of the words. And I think that, you know, people shouldn't shy away from reading, because I hear it all the time. They go, oh, I don't want to read that. It's erotic. And I don't want to read this because it's horror. And to me, this is not making sense anymore, because usually what's happening with the writers that are doing a lot of this, they're good stories. I mean, and they're missing everything. Charles, what do you think about that?
Oh, man, I love horror. I grew up with it. I played it as a kid. My friends and I, we used to play horror movies in my backyard till we were like 12, 13 years old. we went to horror movies. I always loved horror growing up. And I've seen a lot of horror working in the mental health field for 25 years. I've experienced a lot. I worked on a secured psych unit for 12, and I've seen a lot of horrors. But I go to write. Like when I wrote The Pumpkin Thief, it was about my friends and I when we were kids being chased by the older kids, being harassed, being, you know, beat up. And there was no Pumpkin Thief. However, I wish there was, because he probably would have helped us. But I just, you know, that's the only horror element in The Pumpkin Thief. The rest of it is pretty much a mystery. You know, where have the pumpkins gone? Stuff like that throughout the story. But I tend to write... like with the Kyle MacGirt series, the first one that's coming out, The Hunt for the Ghoulish Bartender, the first one in the series, it's got horror in it, because, you know, we got a ghoulish bartender who's growing a group of ghouls to take over a town, and Kyle's got to go after him, but yet there's fantasy to it because he has a medallion that was passed down from his pa, and he's using it because he can see visions and he can foretell where these creatures that are being born from an Indian tribe that have the evil medallion, you see, so it's all fantasy too. So I just go with what I just go with what
right.
I, you
so
know.
I think that that's what, right, because we have, you know, because we have a lot of archive listeners, and I think that when they listen, I really think this is an important conversation for them, because I think they shouldn't shy away from doing things or getting labeled as one writer when sometimes when you're doing a, if you start out doing a mystery, it could end up horror because of what you could find, you know,
exactly.
What you're discovering,
exactly.
You know. And so
exactly.
I think that, you know, I was thinking about this a long time, and it's interesting, Trent, you were talking about that, because I think sometimes now, because the market is huge and we're all in this market, there's so many writers that are in it, that now people are not selling as much as they'd like to, and they're kind of giving up and say, oh, maybe I should go on something else. But I think, how does everybody feel about the sales? I mean, I think for me, marketing, I find it so much hard. I mean, I would love to write just all day. I don't like this marketing. It's very, very difficult because you're marketing with everybody, and it's like, it's really very difficult to get sales unless you maybe sometimes go out and have your own book signing or do things like that. How does everybody feel about
yeah.
the sales? Are they happy? Are you happy with your sales, or are you unhappy, Trent? How do you feel about that?
I think my sales could be better. I would
yeah.
certainly
well,
like them to
all,
be better.
Right. Yeah. But you, so do you get disappointed then? Because
I mean,
a lot
sell
of people do.
Pretty steadily, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, so you sell. Okay. But see, that's the thing. I mean, so like on Amazon, I don't particularly do this, go on all the time and look at how many numbers I have because it would drive me crazy. But certainly when I have a lot of different books out, I can't. It takes up so much time. But also, you know, sometimes people don't realize if they sell one or two books, all of a sudden it goes up in rank and it goes down in rank. And I think that everybody's concentrating on looking at that rather than writing the best they can. They're so worried about getting sales or good book reviews.
Right.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, wait, go ahead, Trent.
No. All right. No. I. You know. I totally understand that, and I. You know. I can try and bring in my opinion. You know, as a publisher and an author. I mean, as a publisher, I'll be honest with you. You know, the majority of our sales that are doing very well are usually, you know, I got to say it, and I'm not being, you know, I'm just saying it, you know, if you have a name, that certainly helps. But that name
yeah.
had to start somewhere, and that person
right.
had to start just like we did. So,
yeah.
You know, I think, and now as an author, I'll throw in my view as an author, and I'll say, you got to promote. You got to self-promote. You've got to get out there. You got to get the book signings. You got to get the conferences. You got to get your name out there. You got to, you know, have good quality work. So when people read it, they say, okay, that was good. You know, it wasn't a Stephen King novel, but it was good. It was well written. It was edited. It was good. You don't want to just go out and self-publish something without any editing, because you're going to lose people because they're not going to want to come back because they're going to think it's the same thing. So I think it's a lot of it's all a growing process. We all learn as writers to just keep doing the right thing, keep plugging the right markets, keep,
yeah.
you know, keep going forward.
What in your opinion is the right markets? What do you think? I mean, let's say horror. Like, how would you market that for people? I mean, that's because I know everybody's going crazy talking about this all the time now. It's a big subject that, you know, and a lot of people don't want to talk about it because their sales aren't that good, but you're right, you have to go out and market.
Yeah, well, you're saying, what do you think of the market of horror? You're saying?
Yeah. How do you think that, how do you, like a lot of times you can't, you know, the libraries, like you're saying with erotic, then you know, the libraries aren't running for these kind of people to come in, which they should, because normally you're just going to talk about writing. I mean, regular people that aren't writers, they want to know, they just want to talk, they love to meet authors.
Yeah, you know what, though, you got to look at, like, take Hunger Games, for example. Hunger Games, well, regardless whether it's young adult fiction, that's a horror book. Kids are killing kids. So, I don't think it's the people necessarily, you know, that go after, you know, if it's a good book, it's got a good written story, it's got a good story to it, it doesn't matter whether it's horror or mystery, people are going to buy it. It's what the problem is, you know, there's so many small presses out there, so many writers in the small press market, we're the ones, myself included, that need to, you know, climb that ladder and get out with a good story and have it, you know, go further and further. Like, for instance, my Pumpkin Thief doesn't do that well on Amazon. I've sold more copies going to book signings, going to yard craft market sales events, and selling, you know, to, you know, through those avenues than I did online, you know. But that's me, because I'm not a well-known author, you know. I'm just a new guy on the street. But
well, there's a lot of new guys on the street that are really good, though.
Yeah,
you know, that's the thing. You know, Elizabeth, you've been in this business a long time. How do you feel about this? You know, I know you used to go to conferences. You still go?
Oh, I still go to the conferences. I actually am scheduled for another one in January and a book reading in February. But I think that one big problem, especially with social networking, is that a lot of writers are trying to reach readers, and instead, I mean, yes, we know writers write. But most of the writers that are out there are trying to sell their books, and so it's almost like you're talking into an echo chamber. So the problem is reaching the readers without pitching to them. Well, the readers don't want to be pitched to. If you pitch to them, they get angry. So the key is to engage the readers without hard selling them. And I found that the best way to do that I've discovered would be, you know, on Facebook, when you're actually just talking to people. And I go to well, it's erotic, but I go to once a month an online chat from, 8 until 9 o'clock at night. And it's all readers. There are like 30 readers in there, and it's every month.
That's the thing, the readers. So how did you get involved in that online chat? Did you just know them? Or?
I'm a member of a group called Midnight Seductions, and they managed to get hold of this, you know, this chat going a couple of years ago, and I've been doing it steadily for over a year. So I see the same people all the time, and you know,
Can anybody get on that, or is it
no? Only people who are members of Midnight Seductions. It's a networking writers group for erotic writers. But the main thing is that you have to. The problem is reaching the readers. That's what everybody seems to have a problem with.
Right.
Yeah. That's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's true. The readers. And, you know. Well, go ahead, Trent. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say I agree with her because I agree because the, you know, like Facebook and all, you know, a lot of the people that we know on Facebook are also writers. So it's a lot harder, you know, you need to go way beyond there and find other avenues to reach to the readers. But I will just throw this in about the horror. The Horror Writers Association that I'm a member of has collaborated with the American Library Association and has started up a big young adult literacy program for horror.
That's great.
And they've got a big comic book, a comic strip writer. I don't know his name. I forgot it. Bigsley or something like that. And he's actually promoting the Horror Writers Association and young adult literacy. And they're going to have a conference coming up in sometime January, whatever, midwinter. And they're going to meet with all the American Library Association members and librarians. That's a good thing because that will help.
I think it's a really good
bring
thing.
Horror
that
into the libraries.
Thing.
Yes.
Yeah,
yep.
Because that's
so.
Right. Because, you know, I mean, people, this is a genre that the kids are liking, adults are liking, and, you know,
exactly.
And this, you know, and the same with, like, erotic. If, you know, I myself have figured out the fact of if I didn't use some of the words that I put in, it's just a regular romance or just a regular story. So I think that, you know, I'm thinking if you're writing an erotic scene, sometimes after doing this for the third time now, I'm thinking, you know, I wrote this woman, this character, Virginia Templeton, before. She swore a lot, but she didn't say sexual words all the time. And I think when I'm doing the sex scenes, I'm thinking she doesn't have to really say some of the words. It's now because I'm realizing that as long as it's a sexy situation, that works. So I think that readers should sometimes push a little over and go into the romance market that says it might be erotic, but they have stories. It's not like there's no story because this my third one is taking me a very long time because I didn't like what I did at the beginning of it. It's a longer story than I thought it would be, but it's not all sex. It's not about that. My character's powerful, and that's what they're liking about it. However, I'm giving her something to end the series with, but I want to give her something more than just sex, you know, and I did. So, and I think people shouldn't shy away from that. The same with horror. You know, I wrote a horror script I never thought I would. I think it's still more of a deep, dark fiction, but there were a lot of people that were killed in it. You know, I wrote it with my editor, you know, Jeff Fleischer. We wrote the script. And, you know, that's why, to me, I'm thinking it's deep, dark fiction, and what makes it so much like thriller, I mean, or what makes it so much like, you know, it's horror, you know? I mean,
yep.
With the kids, like you're saying, with, you know, with Hunger Games, I was with a friend of mine last night, and she was talking about, we were talking about Jennifer Lawrence. I saw Bradley Cooper's movie, and Jennifer Lawrence was in it, and they were great. I thought it was a really good movie. And she said she hates Jennifer Lawrence. I go, like, why? She's a really good actress. She didn't like the Hunger Games because she felt, you know, kids pitted against kids and killing, you know, each other and whatever. But it was such a popular book. So how do you justify saying that? I mean, you know, that's why the libraries, they almost have to, which is a good thing, start doing this, because kids are wanting to read this.
Yep.
You know,
well,
and you look at
the
stand
to read. I mean, anything that gets kids wanting to read is a good thing.
Yeah, I agree.
Regardless of genre. And all genre really
adults,
is...
Yeah.
All genre really is just, it's just... They're just different ways of telling stories. You know, some people...
That's a good
description.
So you're saying different... That's actually interesting. What do you say? Different... That's an interesting thing to put out there. Different ways of saying
You know, there's literary... Quote, literary, end quote. And then there's, like, genre, which... You know, a lot of people shy away from, or they shy away from the quote literary. But when you come down to it, it's all at the core. It's all trying to tell a story.
Right.
And something like The Hunger Games, which has been coming out, you know, is a perfect example of something awesome, which I haven't read them, so I don't know. But I see nothing but good coming from them, whether I would enjoy the books myself or not, I don't know, but they've got, you know, just like Twilight and Harry Potter and all these other things,
right,
that get people really excited to read. And we're such an illiterate society as it is that it's a wonderful thing. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I agree with you on that, because I see when I first saw Harry Potter, and I saw, you know, I like to look, because they actually, if I write screenplays and things, I like to watch the audience. So I'm watching all these, like, 12- and 13-year-old boys, and they're sitting there. They're not moving, okay? It's, like, 3 hours, and they're sitting there, two and a half, whatever. And I'm thinking, this is really good, because where do you find that? That young guys of 12 or 13 are going to sit and actually look at a movie, read a book? They did. And that's really what brought people back. And I also think the iPad and all these, you know, now the readers, I think there's more people reading, because they can take, you know, there's nothing to do. You just click a button.
Well,
right.
Not only are they reading, especially when you're talking about a book the size of Harry Potter, they're reading books that are the size of cinder blocks. I mean, these things are huge.
Right.
And, I mean, and of course, then they get the school groups that want to ban the books. I remember when they were trying to ban R.L. Stein, and I just kept thinking, the kids are reading. Let them read. You know, okay, you know, you can get them started on this and then move them into something else. And, I mean, I haven't read The Hunger Games yet anyway. But I'm really curious to read them, because they remind me a little bit of Battle Royale, you know, the Japanese horror movie, and the Japanese, it's another cinder block novel. But one thing interesting that you said earlier, Marcia, when you were talking about dark fiction versus horror, I noticed that some people are very reluctant to say that they like horror or that they write horror, but they kind of like water it down a little, saying, well, I like dark fiction or I like dark fantasy.
Right.
And even from what I understand, some of the publishers are, you know, like steering a little bit away from saying that they write hard to try to attract more people. And I've noticed the same thing with erotic. They'll say that they write saucy
romance. Just doing romance.
Erotic,
right.
You hear that word, and it just knocks people right out.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that it's interesting, though, that because, you know, when you read, like, I, you know, if you read a book and you see, like, they say erotic, okay, maybe there's two sex scenes, okay, or three in some books, okay, and it's like, you know, really? I mean, because if you look at books from the past, I think we had a few authors on a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about the fact that some of the books years ago, they had tons of sex scenes in it. I mean, and most of the writers that write regular, contemporary, whatever, they're sex scenes. I mean, that's part of life. So I just think that, you know, people are afraid of what, you know, and I think that kids are having sex at earlier ages, and the kids are reading certain books. They're reading horror. This is what it is. And I think you're right about anything to get a kid reading is a good thing in some ways. you know, because otherwise they don't read.
Yeah. There's so many fans of Jonathan Mayberry's, you know, his young adult novels with, you know, Rotten Ruin and all that. And they're horror. That's horror. There's zombies in there. There's killing in there. I'm reading James Dashner's Maze Runner, the first of his series that he started, and it's young adult. And there's kids pitted against kids in that too, and, you know. And then there's creepy monsters that are in the maze, and they want to take out the kids that are dropping into this unknown world. So you know what? I look at it like, you know what? You write what you like. You write what you feel you're writing. You write it, and when it's done, you know, is this horror? Is this mystery? Is it a combination of both? And you take it from there. But I also want to just throw in too. You guys were talking about the e-books, and on the publishing side of the industry, I just recently got information that Random House, if you don't know, is going to be starting up an exclusive young adult digital e-reader books. And why are they doing that? Because the market trend. The young adult readers are starting to download books, and it's going to get more and more so as they get older. So we're in a good time. You know, we're in a good time.
I agree with you on that because, you know, when the iPad first came out, it was very expensive. But now you can get an e-reader for $150. You can get Kindle, you know, and it's really, you know, I mean, when you think about it, when you're downloading a book for $2.99, 99 cents from a free, then it's, you know, you might have to buy a book that's $15, $18. It becomes very, you know, expensive. And so, you know, if you want to be an avid reader, it's expensive. So I think this works, and I think that's why Barnes & Noble, they're all having downloading in their, you know, at the bookstores now.
And I'll give you another piece of information. Another piece of information which is important is the comic books. Yeah, I love comics. I've always grown up loving comics, superheroes and stuff like that, DC, Tales from the Crypt, all those ones that were thrown out by our parents when we were kids. But you know what? It's making a comeback. Go into the comic book stores now. You're going to see a new Frankenstein series. You're going to see Stitches. You're going to see The Walking Dead. The horror is coming back into the comics as well. And that's the other reason why Evil Jester Press is doing comics. Because we want to show our, you know, rising stars have short stories. I know Trent's got short stories. I know everyone here has got short stories. And we're going to adapt them into comics, and we're going to put them on the shelf. We're going to get those on the shelves, and people are going to see, they're going to read horror, but they're going to see it in a visual sense, too. And I think that will lead many readers.
I think they're going to like that.
And they may go buy a book from that author after, too.
Yeah.
They may go buy a book, a novel from them. So you never know.
Trent, go ahead.
I was just listening.
Oh, okay. You know, but I think that, you know, for what it is, I think, you know, people, when they're listening to the show, you know, because the name of my show is A Good Story, The Good Story, because my manager years ago, he said, you know, just write a good story. Write something you like. Write something that you're satisfied. Write something that when you finish it, you go, okay, I think I've done what I like, and I'll move on to something else, and don't be afraid to try things. I mean, I go into different genres. One of my friends, they asked me, why did you do an erotic romance? I said, I wanted to try it. I wanted to go out of the box a little. I wrote the character in a screenplay, so for me, she was a natural one to use, and I absolutely enjoyed doing a short story. I really did, and this people told me years ago, write short stories. I go, I don't want to. I write books. I write screenplays, but I think that short stories can get you in a different market, and you can test it as an ebook to see if you can have readers or what they say about it and things like that. You know, where I started getting 5 stars on it, I was like really surprised because it was the first short story I ever wrote. You know, naturally, you know, I think of my teachers in the past thinking, well, look, they could see, they don't know who I am under that name. But, you know, it's like, you know, sometimes you never know what you're going to be doing. You know, and when I started doing regular stories, I used my Marcia Casper cookbook. My scripts are that. And sometimes when I was writing scripts years ago, I changed my, you know, I used to go under Max Irving because I thought, oh, a woman should not be doing talking like this because it wasn't going to be right. And, you know, and I thought, like, it was a reflection on me. But I've lost that now. So I now realize it doesn't matter to me. You know, and certainly, you know, for those who don't know, I am a literary agent. I don't really have clients right now, except for one or two, but this is what I do. And, you know, I hated to always turn away people, so I tried to keep them writing. by talking to them or whatever. And I think, Charles, how do you keep people writing? I mean, you know, you may turn them down, but what do you say to them, you know, when they send you things you might not want to publish?
Oh, somebody sends them a story to be published? Well, the way it works with Hidden Thoughts Press, I have since I was in the field for 25 years in mental health, I kind of know what stories will help be inspirational. But over at Evil Jester Press, Pete Giglio and Eric Shapiro handle submissions, and because they're the ones that are going to edit and do the books. So I don't really have any involvement in that, which is a good thing because I'm a nice guy and I hate to turn people down. But it's with the Evil Jester... With the Evil Jester comics, I'm reading the short stories and I'm selecting the ones that I know will adapt well into comic, and then I shoot them up to my co-creator David Hayes, who does scripting and things like that. So, so you know what? If I have to reject a comic short story, I don't think people are going to be offended because it's pretty much it's different. I'm just going to tell them, hey, it's not that your story isn't good; it is. But I can't make it into a 4-5 page comic. We can't script this because, you know, there's too much. We need to be a little more visual here. So do you have something else? And then I may consider that, you know? So,
you know, I think for me, like when you write a screenplay sometimes, I know, because now, Trent, I know that you did a play. I mean, I think you really learn a lot when you write a screenplay because you learn how to edit yourself out, but you also see it very visually. And, you know, that now when I come back to writing after doing a lot of screenplays, I think it's easier for me to visualize what I'm doing and learning how to edit myself. You know, now I don't edit my books. I mean, edit myself as far as, like, getting rid of stuff I don't need. You know, I need an editor, definitely. I am not an editor. You know, because a lot of people say they are editors, they're not editors, you know. Charles, take this for an example. How do you really choose an editor? Because what's happening is everybody says, oh, yes, my friend is an editor, they were a teacher, and I've seen teacher screenplays, you know, and I know, and I've seen teachers' books. So just because someone's a teacher doesn't mean they're editor. So how do you pick your editor?
Pete was a no-brainer. I knew Pete was very professional in editing and all that. And same thing with Eric Shapiro. So, but over at Hidden Thoughts Press, I did have to select some editors, like for some forthcoming projects that are coming out next year. I did choose a few, but the way I chose them is actually one of them helped me with a book. So I saw she was pretty good at editing. The other person had an editorial service, which she was doing pretty well with, so I figured that would help. And then the other one that I have, she's working on her master's in English. So I said, well, at least she can work with my executive editor, Hidden Thoughts Press, so whatever she doesn't catch, my executive editor will catch, the one that's got the 15 years experience. That's pretty much how it works. But if I get an editor just to go on like a mental wellness collection, or if he chooses somebody for an anthology, the editor just has to be able to at least, line it and, you know, catch the grammar and catch the sentence structure and stuff like that.
Right.
Pete will definitely take the final look at everything. Same thing at Hidden Thoughts. So that's how it works. We're all a big team.
Now, Elizabeth,
well,
you did self-publish, right, Elizabeth?
Self-published a couple of novellas, and I did hire an editor that I found through a professional editing service, and the way I found her, and she's also editing my mystery thriller, the one that I'm working on now. The first thing I did was I went on the internet, and then I asked the question, what kind of questions do you ask ask an editor as far as experience? And, I need somebody who can find continuity problems. I need someone who has good grammar. People that will, I need a second set of eyes, because after you've been working on something for so long, you know, the word alligator can crop up and you won't see it. That's
true. Right.
I mean, your brain just doesn't focus anymore. So
it doesn't, you don't even see it. You, sometimes when I'm reading something and I think I see it, then I'm talking it in my head, and it's like you can't, you know, Trent, all right, you edit that, which I didn't know. Now, do you have people, you edit yourself too, or do you just edit other people?
I self-edit, but I have an editor that I've hired. And she looks over it for me, to give me a second opinion, and to point out things that I've missed, plot holes, inconsistencies, that sort of, that's the important thing for me, is to find any inconsistencies or factual problems that I might have in a story. And I know some writers also use beta readers, but I've never used one of those. It's basically a second set of eyes, somebody who can look over your manuscript with a fresh vision. And I think that's very important. And one of the main things that I've heard, especially for self-published writers, is that you absolutely must hire an editor, because so many books that have been self-published are pieces of trash that, they're misspellings and grammar problems, and there's all kinds of problems with the books. And they give a lot of writers a bad reputation.
Now, Trent, you edit, but also when you write something, do you do your own editing or do you have somebody edit your work?
I do my own editing, but what I usually do is I've never hired an editor. Usually the publishers I worked with, not all, but some, have an editor who will go through. like Nightscape Press, who did my novella Butterfly Potion, they were really good with editing, and they caught stuff that you take for granted things because you're so close to it. And I keep bringing up this thing to friends of mine in there. I used the kind of cliche thing, three sheets to the wind, but I had put in there three sheets in the wind and never caught it every time I looked it over, because in my brain it was already right, and I knew what I meant.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
when Nightscape got it, I was like, right away, they caught it. Like, I think you meant, and I was like, ah, crap, exactly.
Yeah, because you don't sometimes, because, right, you're looking at one thing and you're thinking another.
I found the best thing for writing, there's always exceptions. I usually have a friend who either by school or naturally is good at editing, but who isn't a writer. To go through my stuff, because I've found writers often, whether they like it or not, they have a writer's brain. And so they kind of want to do it the way they would want to do it.
Right. It's not a good thing. Not a good thing, right.
Interesting point,
because they can show, in a few sentences they can change your whole story and make it something that it's not. And that's the problem, right? I'm very cognizant of that, because I really, when someone, I do not want them to change my story. I don't care. They can edit it and they can put it in different order, whatever, but don't change what I've written, because it won't match everything else.
Right. And finding someone who maybe knows, like the one I'm working on now, which is a novella that I'm worried is going to lengthen into a novel, has a fair amount of art history in it. And I love art. My family, I grew up around a lot of art and whatnot. But I don't know it that well, so I'm doing as much research as I can to keep it in there. But the reader who's going to edit that, who has the skills, and I'm kind of excited about it, is my mom. Because she's really good with editing. She's a big reader, not a writer, but she also has an art history degree.
That's
so it was a no-brainer, because she offered before I even started writing this one. And then I thought, oh, this is perfect, because she'll know a lot about if I'm totally making stuff up that makes no sense in the art history area, or if I'm right, she'll be able to help make that a little bit stronger.
See, that's the one thing, that's what people don't realize sometimes. If you're not really from the field that you're actually talking about, you have to do some research. And it's so easy now. You just go on the internet and look. Years ago, you have to go to the library and start reading all these books. But now you can just look it up, and you can find out, and you have to read things. Even if you don't use it all, at least in your mind when you're writing it, you have some sense of what's right and what's wrong, rather than, because you don't want to insult people that are reading it that will know.
Yeah, you want to know what you're talking about, and you want to know what that character's life is like, even if very little of the art stuff in this case actually winds up in the final draft. I still need to know all this stuff.
No,
because this is the character. Yeah.
Yeah, because that's true, because even though sometimes when you're writing something, you may not use it if you're doing research, but in your mind, when you're writing the character, you know it. So what the character says and does will reflect from what you know, even if every last word isn't what you read. But but at least they have a knowledge of what they're talking about.
Right. Right. And I've taken to writing longhand again after many years. I've stopped taking my laptop to cafes. I like to write at cafes a lot. I've stopped taking my laptop, and I've been printing up my manuscript, taking the manuscript with a pen, and usually my Kindle or a book or whatever, and I'll sit and I'll edit, and then I'll continue writing longhand.
That's exactly what I do. And sometimes when I really, because sometimes I'm tempted, then I go on the internet. I don't want to go on the internet when I'm writing. So what I do is I take my yellow pad and I just go. And if I need to really think, I have to write it longhand because I don't want anything else in my mind other than what I'm writing. And I do go to coffee shops sometimes, even though I have an office or I'm at work or at home. I still, and I don't have little kids running around anymore, but it's like I need to be at a place where I can think, where I don't have to do anything else except think. And I do longhand, too, a lot of times because I find I, you know, and then when I go to the computer, I sometimes write it differently, but I've thought it out at least. While I'm doing it.
Yeah, the brain seems to work differently writing longhand or typing.
Doesn't it? I mean, I'm not sure about my brain anyway. So it's like, you know, sometimes, but I think that for me, it does, it's interesting that you said that because not many people do that anymore, and I really like to do that. You know,
don't
I
you get
like
funny
I
looks at cafes?
I walk in with
paper and a pen. And everyone's got computers, and they're looking at me like, what's that weird stuff he's carrying?
I know. I know. Well, my husband, sometimes he knows even when I'm thinking, even if I'm at a movie, it's ridiculous, though, but I do it all the time. When I'm watching a movie, sometimes I think of something that will relate to something I'm doing that has nothing to do with the movie. I start writing in the dark. I mean, you know, it's in the show. And, you know, he already knows it already. My husband is used to it. But I take a book with me because sometimes you'll get a thought that if you don't write it down, you are not remembering that thought. Because you could go home and say, what was I thinking? And you don't know. Because it's just at that moment it hits you. You know, does that happen to you? Elizabeth, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say that I used to write things out in longhand, but I'm so not used to writing longhand anymore that my hands cramp up after about 20 minutes. And at this point, I'm surprised I still know how to write my name. But from what I've been reading, I understand that some schools are thinking of phasing out longhand writing and just having the kids do typing on their computers. And I'm like, well, you've got to learn how to write. What if the electricity goes out? And, I mean, the way that I do it, I used to write in longhand and just write whatever came to my mind and then keep it as a slush file so that I had a background information that I would pull out of the story because I would be thinking aloud. But, one thing that I do like as far as that kind of writing goes is doing the research. Like Trent was talking about doing research in art history. And I have an art background myself. I majored in it. And one of the stories that I wrote for Zippered Flesh 2, Tales of Body Modification Gone Bad, I looked into some really wacky cases of plastic surgery. And I learned a lot of things I didn't want to know. but that kind of information really helps you out. It really helped me out as far as writing the story went. And some of it is based on things that really happened, which makes the story even creepier. But
you know what? Send that over to Evil Jester Press when we open up the submissions. That sounds creepy.
I'll tell you, okay, before we had to end the show, what I want to do is I want everybody to, say whatever they want at the end, you know, where you can reach all of you and what your last part, you know, your latest project is so people can, you know, try to maybe take a look at it. And I think this is a form, to me, this is a form, like the radio shows are really good promotion because they hear your name out there. And I think that's a good thing. I don't know if it necessarily gets book sales like everybody wants because everybody's just cramming for the same book sales like we were talking about before. But I mean, I think after talking to all of you who've done a lot of things, I think people might realize just relax a little and just write. And, you know, kind of do the best you can and don't expect the writers on Facebook to be buying your book because that is not happening. You know, you want readers. I try to get readers on my show. I want readers. Nobody wants to be a guest if they're a reader, though. But I would love to have just to hear what readers want to say, but a lot of times they don't want to do shows. But I think it would be very interesting.
Yeah, I, you know, that's it. You got to look at your Facebook, too. I mean, I have to just say that I did get a lot of writers who bought my book as well. But I also have a lot of friends on Facebook that are not writers. I've got a lot of friends from high school I know.
Right.
I've got artist friends that like to read. So I think, you know, you just don't want to friend all your writers only. You want to friend your friends and your friends' friends and your cousins and nieces and their friends. You know what I mean? So
I've made so many wonderful contacts on Facebook.
Oh, me too. I've made an amazing number of contacts.
Oh my God.
Oh yes. I mean, for me, yes. I mean, I have made some really good friendships on that, and you know, so I think sometimes people have to realize that friendships are sometimes better than sales because they last longer than the sale does, you know. And I think that it's been Facebook for me as like my regular friends. Don't kind of understand. They think I'm talking to all the friends I went to high school with. I'm not. You know, that is not who I'm talking to, or college or whatever. I'm not talking to them. They're, you know, if they friend me, it's just occasionally somebody will see what somebody does. It's not like I sit there and I'm talking to them. We're all talking to each other, and, you know, everybody on this thing, you know, now we, you know, you've met people and then you meet their friends, and apparently this show now is a roundabout because all of you three have something in common, which I've had to draw before, you know, and, you know, that's why I like to have these shows where people do know each other, because sometimes it's very nice to talk to someone that you're emailing a lot and, you know, you can kind of hear more in a discussion of what they're thinking because, you know, you're not sitting there in a whole discussion sometimes. So, you know, I do think that the friendships are worth it for me. You know, I really do. For me,
I only had like 5 minutes before I called to come on the show because, you know, Christopher had sent that, you know, there was a difference in the date. So I only had 5 minutes, but what I did was I took the link for this and I put it on my Facebook wall, and, you know, so this way they could see Trent and Elizabeth, my name, all of us.
The link is good, and you can always find the links on Blog Talk Radio. You can go under Marcia Casper Cook or worldofinknetwork.com, and we have our things going all the time, and all the links can go out, but they stay out, and that's the good thing. And, you know, sometimes people, we really have a lot of people listening because they do, Blog Talk has been great. I've done like almost, 2.5 years of shows, so they do feature the hosts now on World of Ink, Virginia Grenier and myself, and all the people that are with us now. So, I mean, so that's a good thing. And, you know, we've gotten a lot of people listening in all different genres. And what I'm saying to people out there that are listening to this, even though it says horror or erotic, give yourself a chance and maybe read them. These books are on, you know, they're not that much money, and you can try some of these stories, and you'll be very surprised what you read, and you'll be very happy that you've read some of these writers instead of saying no. You know, I mean, just try a little and, you know, vary what you do because everybody here is wanting to also, you know, we all step out of the box and try different things. And I think if people that were reading did that, they'd be much happier because they would really read some good books that they're not aware of.
Well, if not for Facebook, I wouldn't have, you know, I wouldn't have met Charles or Elizabeth
or you.
And now in one way or another, we've all worked together. I mean, in one way or another. So.
Absolutely. And that's what, you know, I think that people understand that we're all learning. I mean, I like to learn from my shows, and I have. There's not one show that I take notes when I have shows because I'm listening to everybody, you know, and then I go back and listen sometimes because all of you, certainly the three of you, have given great information. So I really want to thank you for that. I mean, this has been a great show. You know, sometimes I do have too many guests on the show. We know that about me. But, you know, but as you see, today worked out really well. So it was a very good show. All right, Trent, where can they find you?
Me, you can find me either at my totally unupdated, out-of-date website, TrentZolasny.com. Better to find me at my Facebook author page, which is Trent Zolasny, the writer in Ward 11. And there's also a fan site, which I honestly had nothing to do with, even though some people think I did, called Zolasnyites.com. And my new book is Too Late to Call Hector.
Yeah, because everybody's going out going, like me, like me, like me. And it's Yeah, no, you know, and it's not, you know, if you like a person, that's great, but this is what's happening now. Everybody has to pick, you have to like everybody, but then they don't even know what they're doing sometimes. They don't know who they're liking and what they're saying. They just got to go and click. All right, okay, Elizabeth.
Okay, you can find me at eablack-writer.blogspot.com. But, you know, like Trent, you'll find me much, much quicker on Facebook. And on Facebook, I'm Elizabeth A. Black. You know, very easy to find. And I also have my own horror page on Facebook, E.A. Black's Tales to Keep You Awake All Night. And I have two new short stories coming out in two anthologies over the next couple of months. One of them is called We Are All Mad Here, and that's going to appear in Zippered Flesh 2, Tales of Body Modification Gone Bad. And the second one is Trailer Trash Zombies, and that's going to appear in Midnight Movie Creature Feature.
Awesome.
You're busy. You keep busy. All right, Charles?
Yeah, well, for me, first you got to look for a box. It's a jester box. When you find the jester box, you got to crank the lever. Once you crank the lever, out's going to pop the jester. He'll tell you where I am. I'm usually mostly I'm on Facebook, a lot on Facebook. I've got a charlesdavefictionwriter.blogspot.com, but like Trent, it's kind of outdated, but I have to update it. And that's pretty much
that's
what
I like
can
to have. That's why I like to have you guys on, because that's one of the things I like about everybody on the show that does the whole thing. Everybody's not, they're not updated. See, I like that, because I like
we're
that. We're
so busy
writing. I don't like that minute to minute I know everything that you've done, you know, and I think that, you know, I agree with you on all of that. It's really funny because that's, you know, you all remain true to that, not updating, and I really like that. That's a good thing, because it drives anybody crazy, and you don't write by that. You know, you really don't. You're writing when you're not doing that. All right, so go ahead, Charles. I'm sorry. I couldn't pass that up.
No, okay. If anyone's interested in my forthcoming trilogy with Bloodbound Books, I made in a Facebook page for that, you know, the Hunt for the Ghoulish Watch on the Facebook page. And then I am going to be very soon, I'm going to be starting an event page for Evil Jester Presents Comics, so everyone can come on over, my artist friends, my writers, so we can all see the comics come to life that we're picking and selecting through sketches as we grow in this new division. And I just want everyone to have fun over there as we, you know, make this first big comic that's coming.
You know what?
So
you know, you send me, you know, also, you know, I hate to send me your links, and then I'll put them out in the blogs and things that I do. So send me, you know, now that we've made friendships, send me the things, and I'll put them out also. And, you know, because whatever you're starting new, this is a good thing, you know, to get more people to know what you're doing.
Yep. Yes, likewise.
Okay.
So, yes, please send to me, too. I know we're Facebook friends, so please send to me as well.
Yes.
And send me stuff. I promote other writers all the time.
Yes. It seems like you're going to get some new writers coming in, and that's a good thing. And, you know, anybody, as you know, that, you know, if you feel like ever coming on, just let me know. But I find all of I seem to find you guys. And, you know, because I like to do these shows. You know, and I should say one thing while we're speaking. Bethany Cross and myself, we have a new author's talkromance.blogspot.com where we're putting all the romance writers, any genre. So if you, Elizabeth, or, you know, if your friends, whatever, sign, send me the, you know, just a link to your, you know, whatever book you want us to put on that I romance, and also send me a little bio, tiny little thing, and then just to, so the books, because I'm trying to, like, for at least for the romance, maybe we'll do it for other genres at another time, but just to get people just to find the romance books, you know, and so just send it to me. And I think, you know, horror writers, we should probably do something for that, too, and the romance, you know, the mystery and things like that. I think we should, because, you know, I'm trying to make it where people can find a lot of writers that they wouldn't, because when you're on Amazon, you're with billions of people, you know, and this way, at least, they, you know, they've been on my show, and, you know, and these are people that have been on and been working hard at what they do. So we always try, and if you have things, you know, Trent, anything you want, you know, whatever, and Charles and Elizabeth knows this, just send it to me and we'll put it out, you know, because we like to hear, you know.
All right, I got one.
Right,
I
thank you so much
my,
for being on. Yes, thank you. Yes, and I hope everything goes well with your mother. Thank you. All right, take care.
All right.
Okay.
Thank,
all right.
Thanks,
Elizabeth, thank you. And thank you all
okay.
and everybody. I will see you Friday on our show. Okay? Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye.
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 Thank you. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.